Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Greetings, Bucketheads. Mevar Tegar. Welcome to our 254th May the 4th celebrating episode of MandoVision. I am your host, Dargai Tom, and thank you so much for checking out our small independent Star Wars podcast. We're so glad you're here. Reach out to us on the socials, Mando_Vision on Twitter and Instagram. Email the show, MandoVisionTom@gmail.com. All right, Bucketheads, it's happened. We are now past May the 4th. But I hope everyone that was out there had a great day, got to celebrate Star Wars. Maybe you went to a Star Wars-themed bar or party or event and got to socialize and hang out with other like-minded Star Wars fans. Or maybe you just stayed home, watched the movies at the convenience of your home cinema. Or perhaps you ventured out to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Star Wars The Phantom Menace. Hey, that'd be pretty fun. Might be on my list this week as well. We'll see about that. Fingers crossed. But regardless, we got a nice Star Wars May the 4th. We got a new Acolyte trailer that came out. That looks very exciting. Kind of helps fill in a little bit more of the blanks for the mystery of what that show is and what it's going to be about. So I think that was worth noting. I'm not going to dive too deeply into it. I just want to say that, hey, it looked really, really good. And I'm here for it. I'm excited. I want to see, again, everyone knows if you've been listening to this podcast, I am a big advocate of telling Star Wars stories that aren't in the Skywalker timeline. Let's get out there. Let's do some new things. Let's push the boundaries and really kind of shake things up a bit. And that looks exactly what The Acolyte's going to be. And that show's going to be out with us in less than a month, in June. And we've gotten word that Skeleton Crew will be coming out in December, around the holidays. So that's exciting and something to look forward to. And obviously the reason why we are here, the main reason why we're here for this episode is to talk about Star Wars Tales of the Empire, the new six-part sort of anthology-ish series following two characters. Morgan Elsbeth, a character that we know very, very little about. We got some more information about her from the Ahsoka series, introduced to us, obviously, back in season 2 of The Mandalorian. But a character whose backstory is largely a blank canvas. But they wanted to fill in some of that a bit for us. And then another character, Barriss Offee, one of the most asked about characters from Star Wars The Clone Wars. And a character that has two different fates. Has a fate from pre-Disney, and now has a fate post-Disney. And that's an interesting aspect as well. Barriss Offee, a character that I very, very much enjoyed on Star Wars The Clone Wars in some of the old Expanded Universe novels and comics and things like that. But yeah, Barriss Offee in the old Expanded Universe died on Felucia in Order 66 with her own Jedi Padawan at the time. Then the Clone Wars series, animated series came along and added all these new elements, obviously her arrest being the biggest change. and kind of throwing a monkey wrench into those plans. So then they did the Disney acquisition and them throwing out all of the old expanded universe stuff. And so just, and that just left the Clone Wars, right? So we knew Barriss was in prison, but we had no idea what happened to her when Order 66 was happening. And now we finally get sort of the end of the road. One might be able to conclude from this three-parter in Tales of the Empire. But something that probably the story that I was looking forward to the most out of what we saw initially when they released this teaser for Tales of the Empire. What did I think of them overall? Overall, I really enjoyed this six episodes. I did think they were a tad short. I would have liked them to kind of fill it out a little bit more, particularly when it came to Morgan Elsbeth's story. And we will talk about the specifics of that down the road. I feel like for Morgan Elsbeth's story, we just got like a lot of touchstone moments, but there's still a lot of this character that we don't know and that we don't, that I don't quite understand. And again, we will talk about that on the bump, after the bump here. As far as the Barriss story goes, again, that was the one I was most excited about, most fired up for. And I feel like we got a lot of answers that we, I think we got all the answers we basically wanted. And I think the path that she goes on is a path that, to me, feels very, very right, and does that character a lot of justice. And I'm here for it. I love those three episodes, and we'll talk about those after the bump. But yeah, that's our show for today. We are going to be talking about Star Wars: Tales of the Empire. So make sure you have watched the six parts that are out now on Disney Plus, because we are going to get into it. We're going to give all the spoilers and get into that nitty gritty. So let's talk about you guys know how much I love to give credit where credit's due, all right? So this is Star Wars Tales of the Empire. Original air date, May 4th, 2024. The stories are by Dave Filoni, but we got a murderer's row of writers here. A lot of familiar names that we know from Clone Wars and from The Bad Batch. Writers like Amanda Rose Munoz, Matt Mishnevitz, Nicholas Anastasio, who I think is a new Star Wars writer, and we also got a lot of great directors on this one. Nathaniel Villanueva, Stuart Lee, Sal Ruiz, again, murderer's row of our Star Wars animation directors. Let's go ahead and just break down the episode names as well. For Morgan Elsbeth's story, we have Path of Fear, Path of Anger, and Path of Hate. Obviously, that's why we played the Yoda clip at the very beginning, because, again, a lot of this is the path that Morgan is on. And in a way that sort of highlights all of what Yoda has said to us. We see all of these things come to fruition on Morgan Elsbeth's track, the track that she's on, her destiny, her fate, whatever you may want to call it, lines up with everything that Yoda taught us back in Episode 1 in The Phantom Menace. And then in the Barriss storyline, we have episodes titled Devoted, Realization, and The Way Out. And we'll talk a little bit more about those titles, because I think they have a little bit more to do more directly with the character. Not that the other ones don't, but it's very on the nose. Those Morgan Elsbeth episode titles are very on the nose. So there's not a lot to kind of pull apart there. Morgan's path is one that is sort of, for us, predetermined. We know her end fate. And that's that, as far as that goes. Barriss is, again, where we do get to her fate, but her journey is a lot different than I think maybe we anticipated. Our primary casts for this week, again, we've given credit to the writers and the directors. There's an incredible amount of voice acting being done in these episodes, so let's give credit where credit's due. We have Meredith Salinger returning as Barriss Offee. Diana Lee Inosanto returns as Morgan Elsbeth. Rhea Kilstedt is Lynn, a.k.a. the Force Sister. Steve Bloom, Shelby Young, Susie McGrath, Katie Sackhoff, Lars Mikkelsen, Matthew Wood, Xander Berkeley, Lydia Look, Anna Graves, Dee Bradley Baker, Kathy Ang, Keston John, Warwick Davis. That's right. And Jason Isaacs rounding out, again, many more people, but those are the big ones. And, whoo, like I said, they all bring the goods. I do want to say before we get into things, love the animation, love the action that they do here. The violence was more violent than I anticipated, especially in the opening episode, but we will talk about that more in particular right after this. So you know what that means. It is time. Strap on your buckets. Let's go.
Men like Ystane join out of greed and self-interest. others out of fear, all with ambitions of power. Answer again. Why do you seek imperial favor?
Revenge. Years ago, my people were all but destroyed. Our culture, our beliefs, are fading into memory. Yes, I seek power to ensure my future, to destroy my enemies. My anger gives me strength, and it is that strength that I offer the Empire.
Offer accepted.
Our Morgan Elsbeth arc opens during the massacre of the Night Sisters on Dathomir at the hands of the clone of the separatist droid army, excuse me, and led by General Grievous. We've seen this before. This is from Star Wars The Clone Wars, one of the most violent episodes in the history of Star Wars The Clone Wars. And that violence is, I think, ramped up a little bit more even in this episode as we see Morgan's mother, a full-fledged Night Sister, just going after the droids in a pretty hardcore fashion. And a group of younger Night Sisters trying to escape the, as I said, the massacre of their people. And we already know this isn't going to go well. It doesn't go well. But again, the level of violence that we see to open this animated special, pretty intense, pretty cool stuff. Getting to see a Night Sister just impaled through the chest by a lightsaber from behind, something we've seen before, but it is not to be diminished by this particular one, because it's just, again, the look on the face, the animation is so incredible. But this is Morgan, kind of like her, it's not even like a baptism by fire, but this is like one of the defining moment of Morgan Elsbeth, right? This is what happens. This is what sets her on her path. Her mother dies, her sisters die, she survives, she's rescued by the Mountain Clan. Again, another element of that Courtship of Princess Leia book from back in the 90s that's now sort of being reincorporated into the current canon, which I think is very, very interesting. And, you know, again, that's not a book I've read recently, so my memories of the Mountain Clan are vague and nebulous at best. But in this episode, what I like about the Mountain Clan is that they're almost an opposite, an opposing way to use Force magic from the Night Sisters. You know, the Night Sisters with that green Force magic that has a very dark side kind of element to it all. And then you have the Mountain Clan, which seems to be more of like the light side version of things, you know, and almost if the Night Sisters are Sith, then the Mountain Clan would be Jedi, right? That seems to be kind of like the contrast that we're going for with the two clans and their opposing point of views. But Morgan's rescued by this Mountain Clan and taken back to their base, or their camp, their home, if you will, in the mountains. And the Mountain Clan's still trying to figure things out. They don't know why the droid army was there. They weren't involved in any of those machinations that the Queen Mother, Mother Talzin, and Palpatine were in Dooku as well. They weren't involved in any of that stuff. They don't know why the droid army's there, but they're fearful. And Morgan, after the loss of her mother, is itching for another fight, and she's going to try and stoke the fires of that fear to get what she wants, which is revenge, of course. She's able to persuade some of the younger members of the Mountain Clan that, hey, I know where this armory's at. Let's go get some weapons, just in case those droids do show up. But Morgan is spoiling for a fight the entire time, and she doesn't care about this Mountain Clan at all, especially once they start dying. Morgan is all about the fight. This is the path that she's put herself on. She has been warned by the leader of the Mountain Clan to not go down this road, to not follow those more baser instincts for revenge and for some sort of recompense for what was done to her. But that is the path that Morgan has put herself on very, very early on. And it costs the Mountain Clan dearly, as the leader of the clan loses her daughter in this struggle when the droid army, eventually doing a sweep, comes around. And we got super battle droids going after Morgan and these Mountain Clan people who don't really know how to fight. But again, this is all about Morgan. Morgan puts herself first and foremost, so when these girls are dying around her, she doesn't even realize it. She's just in it to kick some battle droid butt, And again, she does a fine job of it, but she's completely outmatched, and she has no support with the Mountain Clan people who don't know what to do. And as the Mountain Clan, as they rally around and bring their dead home, again, we know Morgan's path. What I want to say, and again, I didn't really know first viewing. I've watched the episodes twice since my initial viewing, so three times total. And I wasn't quite sure how Morgan Elsbeth's story was going to play out. Again, it's a character that we don't know a lot about, but who has a long timeline to kind of fill in. So what these three episodes do is they're sort of touchstone moments on her path. We don't know. We don't get to know every little thing. You know, we see this key moment on Dathomir when she sort of sets her path, again, like the episode showed, the path of fear, the path of anger, the path of hate. This is the path that Morgan is on. This is the first stage of that. So then when we get to the path of anger, which is next, and we see Morgan is older. She's moved on. She is the Magistrate of Corvus, which is where we met her in The Mandalorian. But we don't know how she attained this position. You know, we get some idea, but we don't know. We don't even know how she left Dathomir. None of these things, we don't get a lot of those kind of detail-oriented answers. This is a highlight moment, all right? She's pitching the Empire on the TIE Defender. Apparently Morgan Elsbeth is the original architect of the TIE Defender, which we know so well as a pet project of Thrawn's from Rebels, you know? But apparently, it is Magistrate Morgan Elsbeth's design and resources of Corvus that bring the TIE Defender into potential manufacturing for the Empire. I do like her presentation to the Moffs and how the Moffs sort of shrug off the idea of being able to save lives, having shield generators for TIE pilots. You know, things that we've talked about before, but it's just not kind of nice to underline those elements of why the Empire is the way that it is. They're more interested in the resources of Corvus and the worlds in her system that she controls than they are in designing a superior TIE fighter that will save the lives of Imperial pilots. And Thrawn talks about it when he shows up later on, how it's not cost-effective, and Moffs aren't concerned about that. You know, Moffs are all about saving bucks. That's why TIEs don't have shields. That's why TIEs do what TIEs do. They don't have hyperdrives, you know? I liked underlining that. I liked seeing Rook in this episode. I liked seeing Captain Paleon in this episode. But again, it's these touchstone moments. So you're getting that initial contact moment between Thrawn. But do we understand necessarily why Morgan Elsbeth is so loyal to Thrawn that she will go to another galaxy to rescue him? We don't really get those answers. We also don't get the answer to how Morgan Elsbeth came upon a Beskar spear, which I was really hoping to get that one. That was sort of the one that intrigued me the most. I was like, oh, maybe we'll see how she gets this spear. Maybe she defeats a Mandalorian or blah, blah, blah. That's still speculation now. We still don't get those answers. But we do get a lot. And what we do get when we played the voice, we played the audio clip, Thrawn asking Morgan why she wants Imperial favor, and she talks about revenge. And it's a cloudy motive at best in my mind. Because, again, in my mind, Morgan doesn't even understand who she wants revenge against. She's now allying with the Empire, who, in a roundabout kind of fashion, are the ones responsible for the death of the Night Sisters, of her clan, of her people, of her culture. That's all basically at the hands of Palpatine and the Empire. Now, again, we understand it's not common knowledge that what Palpatine was doing, how he's playing both sides against the middle. But this underlines, again, why Morgan Elsbeth's motives are hazy to me. Because who is she going to get revenge against? Grievous is dead. The droid army's been decommissioned and sent to scrapyards. She just wants to make people pay for her pain and for her hurt. And that leads to the suffering that we talked about, right? Now the people of Corvus are suffering under her leadership because she's taking it out on them. And they don't have much time for her either. When Rook springs into action and attacks Morgan Elsbeth, they have no interest in calling for security to help her. They feel that she has betrayed them because she wasn't able to land those Imperial contracts. But ends up winning the day, comes into favor with Thrawn. And these workers who I think thought they were going to be able to profit more greatly are now going to be sort of forced into servitude in a sense for the Empire and for what I would imagine are to be minimal wages. And then we get to the third episode, which is another jump in the timeline, because now we are in a post-Empire world. We are pre her first appearance in The Mandalorian, but the New Republic comes a-knocking. A former being who lived in Corvus under Magistrate Elizabeth returns as a senator and wants to invite Corvus to join the New Republic. I thought it was interesting how Morgan had controlled news, basically, at this point. When the senator arrives, the citizens of Corvus had no idea the Empire had been defeated. And I would imagine that is because Morgan Elsbeth was not going to tell them that. Now, again, this Morgan is more in line with the one we meet in The Mandalorian. She's isolated herself. She has mercenaries around the town to kind of keep the people in line. But I sort of wonder, like, again, I don't know what's going on. The Empire has been overthrown. It's been around that five-year mark that we talked about post-Return of the Jedi. Obviously, the TIE Defender program has been scrapped. So what exactly is it as Morgan Elsbeth been doing? These are questions that I don't have answers to. Now, again, she lashes out at the New Republic. She's going to make this girl pay for leaving Corvus because she believed that the work was beneath her. And all. Again, the interplay between the two characters is very, very interesting. And it's all in many, many senses, it's setting up what we see when Ahsoka shows up on Corvus to arrest the Magistrate. There's a big element to fire in these three episodes, particularly in the first episode and then here in the third episode when Morgan burns the forest around the Prime Capital there. Very reminiscent of the Clone Wars explosions and the fires that Morgan is coming out of there. And, excuse me, when we leave Morgan on Dathomir after the battle with the Super Battle Droids, after the Mountain Clan has suffered their losses, you know, we see Morgan wrapped in fire, basically. And that's how this third episode ends as well, after she's blown up the Republic ship, after she has lit the forest on fire around the capital, and after she has destroyed the comm device that has the voice of Bo-Katan on it, saying that Bo has heard their distress call. Where are they? What do they need? And at this point, Morgan is just there crushing hope. You know, this is the path of hate. She basically hates these people. And now she's going to make them suffer. And that seems to be what they've been doing since the Empire has fallen. Just suffering. Again, I wish we had more answers to some of Morgan's motivations. I want to know about that Beskar spear. I want to know why she thinks the Empire is sort of worthy of her and her ideas and her vision and her mind. We don't know necessarily the instant loyalty to Thrawn. Is it just because he approached her and recognized her mind for the brilliance that it is? Again, there's a lot of history for Elsbeth that we don't have. These are just sort of touchstone moments in her life. And I think they're good enough. They get us where we need to go. They get us a better understanding of this character. I do wish they had filled out a little bit more of it. But again, three episodes that are very enjoyable. But of the two characters that we're following in Tales of the Empire, this was the lesser for me. And I enjoyed them, but this was the lesser. I wanted that bear story. Give me that bear story. And after the break, we're going to talk about the Barriss story.
They were about to surrender.
Irrelevant. The Jedi are a threat to be eradicated wherever they are found.
Then you have one Jedi left to deal with.
Ah, the Barriss Offee story. I love these three episodes. The first episode, again, and again, Disney/Lucasfilm did a great job when they released that original trailer for Tales of the Empire, and we see Barriss with the Inquisitors, and that is the first episode of this, the devoted episode, right? And it's Barriss being given an opportunity to find a new path. She is able to avoid Order 66 in the new canon, unlike the old Expanded Universe where she did not, because she's locked up and not considered a Jedi anymore. So they don't, the clone troopers don't come for her. They don't execute her in her prison cell. She sees the Jedi Temple burning in the distance, wants to know what's going on, and then they tell her, you're like, you're lucky you're not a Jedi anymore, or else you'd be on fire too. But Barriss is a complicated, complex character, right? We know that she did horrible things. She murdered people. She framed Ahsoka Tano. She blew up a hangar in the Jedi Temple. And in a misguided effort to sort of call out the hypocrisy of the Jedi in involvement in the Clone Wars. So Barriss wasn't necessarily wrong with the things she was saying and with her beliefs necessarily, but she went about them the wrong way. She was tempted by the dark side to do dark deeds and to kill people, and in order to sort of point out the inherent hypocrisy of the Jedi, which we have talked about countless times in this podcast, so don't worry about that, because you know I still believe it. But Barriss is a Jedi to her core and in many, many other senses of the word. And, you know, perhaps it's her time in prison to think about these things, about the choices she made. Perhaps it is the time that she will now spend with the Inquisitors. That helps sort of underline that she's a good person at heart who just made horrible, horrible choices. And that's where these two characters in this series, Morgan Elsbeth and Barriss Offee, differ, right? They make choices. They are presented with temptation to the dark side. And Barriss has touched the dark. She's done the bad things. But she is a Jedi in her core, to the bone, spiritually, any way you want to look at it, right? Like, Barriss Offee knows the difference between right and wrong. And even though she was wronged at a certain point, like, she has to move past that and beyond that to be a better person. Morgan Elsbeth, on the other hand, does not have that. She was raised a Night Sister. You know, she knows that anger and hate, these things make you powerful. That's her belief system. So she goes down that path continually and does not attempt to right the ship. People will pay for the hurt that she feels. Barriss is different. And it takes a little bit of time for her to realize that maybe the Jedi had lost their way, but at their core, the beliefs that the Jedi have are right and good and just and protect the innocent and save people from suffering in the galaxy. Again, it takes a little bit of time because Barriss is lost. When we first get there, she's lost. And she's put in this position with the Inquisitors. And I loved going to the Fortress Inquisitoris as it's being built up, hanging out with the Grand Inquisitor, voiced expertly by Jason Isaacs, and kind of seeing the process. Again, I'm sort of reminded of the Joker in The Dark Knight with his aggressive negotiations, and he breaks the pool stick and just gives one half to the guys to fight for. And that's kind of how it is to become an Inquisitor. She has to square off against Dante, a Jedi that she knows, at the very least a Padawan that she knows from the Jedi Temple days. And another Padawan is there as well, Amir. And he's like, this is crap too. The Jedi were wrong, and these guys are even wronger. I'm out. Well, he doesn't make it very far, does he? No, no, no. So it comes down to Dante and Barriss, and she's put in a position where she has to kill again. And she kills almost in the exact same fashion in which she did in Star Wars The Clone Wars, using a force choke, snapping necks, writing checks. And Barriss is now the newest Inquisitor. And we get that cool scene like we saw in the trailer where we see Force Sister, we see Barriss, we see Maruk, and another new Inquisitor that we know nothing about. Which, by the way, we didn't even talk about. When you queue up these episodes, you get them going, there's a whole new slew of droids and helmets in the Star Wars Open now, including this mysterious Inquisitor's face. So perhaps this is a character we will get more backstory from later on. I'm curious about his giant cape with Imperial insignia on the shoulders, and his mask in general is very, very cool. It's To me, it's very Plague Doctor-esque. Looks a little bit like the Executioner from the X-Men comics. I want to know more. Tell me more about this guy. But again, another kind of like Star Wars with classic misdirect, right? Marook's in this show. Yeah, but he's nobody. He's nothing. It's just another guy in a helmet, you know, and we're never going to get that information on who these people are, I guess. Or at least not in this iteration of Star Wars storytelling. So Barriss joins the Inquisitors, and we feel like, oh, that's her path now. She's going to be hunting Jedi and killing Jedi. And when we pick up in the next episode, in Realization, again, an important title because, again, hunting these Jedi down. This episode, we see the contrast between Fourth Sister and Barriss, who we don't know her Inquisitor name, which I would have liked to. But what can you do? So we go to this world where there's been reported Jedi sightings, and because, again, this is what we know the Inquisitors do. They get information, they get reports, and the Inquisitors are dispatched to find and eliminate any Jedi hideaways, stowaways, whatever you want to call them. Jedi on the run, and to eliminate them. So they investigate. Barriss is with Force Sister. They go to this world, and Force Sister's tactics versus Barriss are very, very different. We see Barriss with the small child. She takes her helmet off. She connects. She talks. She makes the child feel safe, and she gets the information that they need. Meanwhile, Force Sister's like, well, you guys could have told us this same thing. And she makes them pay for it, for not divulging the information that they needed to find the Jedi hiding in the mountains around them. And again, Barriss, these are tactics that Barriss does not agree with, does not approve of. And that comes to a crystallization point. It crystallizes for her on the mountain in the battle with the Jedi as Force Sister and her square off against the Jedi. And Barriss goes about things in a very different fashion. She attempts to talk to the Jedi, talk him down, get him to understand that come with us to Fortress Inquisitoris, sign up. It's a new galaxy, new opportunities await for you. But what Force Sister does, once he powers down that lightsaber and Force Sister cuts him down, it's a moment of clarity for Barriss, that the Inquisitors are nothing like the Jedi. There's nothing redeeming about being an Inquisitor. She will not find herself on the path that she wants to be on. Because, again, Barriss made bad choices in the Clone Wars. She went in the wrong direction with her concerns about what the Rebel, with what the Republic was doing, with what the Jedi were doing, and she went down the dark path. But she is seen of the light, and through her time with the Inquisitors, she sees the light. And so I love that line as her and Force Sister are walking away. And she's just like, you have another Jedi still here. It's so good. And again, Barriss, like, we've seen her with a lightsaber before, but not, she doesn't rely on it. So when Force Sister engages her blade and runs charging, Barriss is with an awesome force push right off the side of a mountain. That's like straight out of a video game. I mean, that is Fallen Order. That is a Force Unleashed, you know, just whipping out that Force Blast and pushing Force Sister off the mountain to conclude that second episode is so great. It's so awesome. And it's that, again, crystallizing moment for Barriss where it's like she is a good person at her core. She is a Jedi at her core. And that was awesome. And then we get to the third episode, the Way Out. And this is a great episode for so many reasons. And I'll let her explain one of them right now.
I forgive you.
I don't want your forgiveness. I want you to show me the way out.
You know the way out. You just have to accept it, Lynn.
Stop calling me that.
But that is who you are.
There is no way out. Is there?
That's what the Empire wants you to think.
So now in the third episode, we catch up with Barriss on another planet, another world, and she's like this sort of mysterious force healer person doing great things, helping people, helping force-sensitive children, and clearly giving of herself. I think that's why she appears to be so much older than Force Sister, is like she's giving of her life force to aid in the healing of others and aid them in their escape from Imperial pursuit. So Barriss is sort of living this very altruistic life, you know, perhaps as a form of atonement, perhaps as a form of penance, but she is giving and self-sacrificing, and the version of her that she wants to be. And I think that stands out. Again, this is seeing Barriss in a way that we haven't before. Not even as a Jedi, so kind of having achieved full self-actualization, realizing who she is and who she wants to be, and being that person. And of course, we get the return of Force Sister, obviously surviving that Force shove off the mountainside. And my guess is, as far as the timeline goes, this must be after we see Force Sister and Kenobi, right? Because after this experience, how could Force Sister possibly go back to the Inquisitors? That's my question. I don't believe that she could, but the ending is a little bit hazy and unclear. But I would imagine that Barriss has put Lynn back on the right path. And I love, throughout these three episodes, this dynamic between Barriss and Force Sister, a.k.a. Lynn, and how Barriss just constantly refers to her as Lynn, never calls her Force Sister, never embraces her as this Inquisitor person, always calls her by this name. And so when they reunite in this episode, and it's been many, many years since their last encounter, I love that Barriss calls her out as basically like a child killer. And it was like, is this what you do for the Empire? You hunt down and kill children? Okay. That doesn't seem like doesn't feel like something you should be doing. Doesn't feel like a you thing. But when, again, we get to like that, there is that duality with the fire for Morgan Elsbeth in episodes 1 and 3. And then in episodes 4 and 6 in this one, we get the great lightsaber exchange. In episode 4, it was Barriss against the Grand Inquisitor and how he was able to evade her because her emotions had made her predictable. And this time around, it's Force Sister who's predictable, and Barriss effortlessly dodging and weaving around her lightsaber attacks, no matter what she does, whether it's the single blade, the double blade, the spinning blade. Barriss knows all the moves ahead of time and evades them quickly and easily. And then we go into the cave, which is echoes of the cave in Dagobah. And, you know, you take in with you, but what you take out is the key ingredient, right? And so Barriss, in a sense, I think, sacrifices herself. I don't know if it was her intent to get impaled by Force Sister, but that's the moment that Force Sister begins to understand that she has been trapped and ensnared. And what does the Empire do? It traps and ensnares. And this has always been Palpatine's MO, to trap, to ensnare. It's classic from the jump. I mean, this is what he does to the Empire. This is what he does. This is what he does to the Republic. This is what he does to the Jedi. This is what he's done to the Inquisitors. Like, this is how he maintains his control. He traps you. He makes you think there is no way out. And here is Barriss Offee showing Lynn, the Force Sister, the way out. It's obviously a big old heavy metaphor. The cave, you know, Barriss warns her, you will not be able to, you will go in that cave and you will not come out because you don't know the way. And in a sense, Force Sister doesn't come out. Lynn is the one who comes out of the cave. It's brilliant and it's beautiful, and I love how well executed it is. Obviously, it feels like this is the end of Barriss's story, that she's sacrificed herself. I would love to find out that Barriss and Lynn survive together and end up aiding on, oh, I forgot the name of it, that underground railroad that the Force Sensitive kids have that we find out about in Kenobi. And again, there's a reference in this episode. They're going to send that kid to meet up with a friend of hers, clearly Ahsoka. So Ahsoka must have forgiven Barriss and must have be a part of this underground railroad for Force Sensitive kids and Jedi that we learned about in the Kenobi series. And I love that so, so very, very much. And you can make, sort of make the argument that in this Bear storyline, we're sort of getting like those touchstone moments like we did with Morgan. But I feel like this gives us a more full picture of Barriss from the Clone Wars to where she ends up here. And if this does be her, it does end up being her final moments, the path of redemption that she took to do what she did, to sacrifice herself, to save innumerable Force-sensitive children and families from the Empire, from the Inquisitors, and then in this final act to possibly have redeemed, or at least given the opportunity for redemption to Fourth Sister, a.k.a. Lynn, at the expense of her own life. I thought it was exceptional. I thought it was a beautifully done arc and episode. I've watched it multiple times. I've loved the dynamic between these two characters from the jump. I love when it reaches that pinnacle moment in the second episode, in the realization episode, when Barriss realizes that no matter what, she is Jedi in her heart. It's a great culmination of everything that we've seen of why the Empire is ultimately going to fail, and to this moment where, again, you sacrifice yourself to show someone else the light, to help redeem someone else. This is Barriss's life, and it's, I'm going to use the word again, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was excellently executed, and it's killer stuff. And I think that's pretty much everything I have to say about this. I mean, a reminder, Palpatine, the Trapster. Like, this guy, if he was a Spider-Man villain, he'd be the Trapster. Ridiculous. But Barriss has now shown Lynn the way out. And will Lynn return the favor and show others the way out? You know, there's a lot of Inquisitors. We don't know their final fate. So perhaps she's able to save some other members of the Inquisitors. Or she just picks up where Barriss left off with helping get these Force-sensitive kids out of harm's way, out and off the radar of the Empire. It's really, really well done. I'm not going to break down the episodes, each episode, you know, with a bucket rating, but the Morgan Elsbeth's, it gets 8 buckets. The Morgan Elsbeth arc gets 8 buckets. The Barriss Offee arc gets 9.5 buckets. It's excellent, and I cannot recommend it enough. I will probably watch these 3 episodes again later today because it's that good. Killer stuff for Barriss Offee. And if this ends up being the end for Barriss, I couldn't ask for anything better as far as a final fate for a character that became sort of a fan favorite. I want to use the word beloved, but again, she did do bad things the last time we saw her in the Clone Wars. But I wouldn't mind filling out Barriss's timeline a little bit more as well. I'd love to see a little bit more of things after that moment where she leaves the Inquisitors to what she's been doing and how she gets to where she is and sort of those moments of giving of herself, of her life force to help others, to heal others, to move them along to safety. A very fascinating character that I'd like to spend more time with. And that's it. That's Star Wars Tales of the Empire. Great stuff, guys. Go check it out if you haven't already and watch it again because there is some nuance. I think particularly there's nuance in the Barriss arc, but the Morgan Elsbeth arc is enjoyable as well. I wish we'd gotten a little bit more information on that character and her path and why she makes the choices that she makes. I still have a lot of questions about her decision-making, how she got that Beskar spear. I want to know these things. Will I get to find out? I don't know. Maybe not. But the Barriss stuff, mwah, chef's kiss. Good times. And that's going to be our episode for this week. I already went on way longer than I intended. But that's how this podcast goes sometimes. Reach out to us on the socials. We're at Mando_Vision on Twitter/X and Instagram. Email the show, MandoVisionTom@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, and share the show with all the Mandalorians in your covert. If your podcasting platform allows it, sweet, sweet, sweet 5-star reviews. Help out small podcasts like us. They help us stand out, get lost in the galactic shuffle. Thank you so, so much. All right, this is the Mandovision Podcast. I am your host, Nargai Tom. Thank you for being here, Bucketheads. You are the best. You continue to be the best. Happy May the 4th, belatedly, to everybody. Hope you got some sweet merch. I know I picked up a few things, mostly clothing items, Roosevelt's. You guys keep making awesome things. Keep spending too much money at Roosevelt's. All right, Bucketheads. I'll talk to you soon. Go out there. Continue to be great Star Wars fans to each other and to others. And get others to watch these episodes. That Barriss arc, that'll bring in the fans. That'll bring in some new fans. Let's do it. All right. We'll be back next week. I don't know what we're talking about yet. It might be back into season 7 of the Clone Wars. We'll see what happens. But until then, remember, this podcast can only end one way. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way. You expect me to search the galaxy for the home of this creature and deliver it to a race of enemy sorcerers?
This is the way.